Everybody, welcome to another episode of The Comic Source. I'm your host, Jace, here to talk today about the second volume of a series that came out from Top Cow, came out from Image. The trade is coming up soon. We talked about the first volume. We had the writers on to talk about the first volume. Absolutely loved the first volume. One of the writers who kind of created the property, Mohsen Ashraf, is back with us to talk to us about volume two. We'll have you give the elevator pitch in just a second, but you have a different co-writer this time, and I want to dive into that as well. But before we get there, remind everybody what Siphon is all about.
It is about a first responder named Silas who gets this ancient power to sense people's negative energies and emotions and siphon them away. So he literally gets to take people's pain away. The catch is he has to live with that pain himself. And in volume one, you see that pain really start to wear him down, as it would for kind of any of us having all that kind of physical and emotional burdens of people. And then he realizes from someone else that, hey, you can take people's pleasure away as well. You can take other emotions and feed off of them kind of as a vampire, as Antonio did in volume one. And so that set up kind of a battle of good and evil and cataclysmic, like, hey, what do you do with this sort of altruism, right? Silas was using it almost as a martyr in certain ways. And Antonio, his antithesis, was using it kind of in a misguided way for his own means. And so then with volume two, you know, we wanted to take that story to the next level. We introduced a lot of concept of pain and pleasure and the duality of this power. And we wanted to take that a little deeper with exploring more myth, more lore of the power, really present more of Silas's partner, Livia. You know, she represents the scientific and rational part versus his emotional and instinctual part, and kind of two sides of the same coin of how do you go deal with, a lot of just issues. And they discuss the ideas of ethics of consent, of the best way to heal from mental illness, and what's the right and wrong way to kind of use this power and really explore this concept of the purpose of pain, of why do we have pain and what's the right way to work through it.
Yeah, and we really dove into that, yourself, myself, and Patrick Meany, who was your co-writer on the first volume, this idea of having this power and how much is too much, how much to sacrifice. You know, if you're taking everyone else's pain away and you're absolutely miserable, how can that be sustained? You know, what makes you the martyr and that sort of thing? And this is, again, multi-layered. There's so much you can get from the story. You want to read it on the surface, it's just a great comic with all that action. But if you want to dive into those deeper meanings, they are there. Which is really cool, because in the first volume, what we got was sort of hints of kind of the scope. You know, you mentioned it being a very epic old power. We got some hints of that. In the second volume, you really kind of push that envelope and we get a lot of history of the power and other people who've wielded it before. But as I mentioned, you have a different co-writer this time for volume two. And I want to remind our listeners, so the entirety of the series, the all four issues of volume two in as singles have come out already. So they're available at your local comic shop. Probably can order them for you if they don't have them on the shelves. But now's the time, if you want to get in and trade, to let your retailer know, hey, order this trade for me, because the trade comes out on May 14th. So they're still able to pre-order it for you. So now's the time. As I always say, nothing helps better than letting your retailer know, hey, order this for me ahead of time. That way they know how many copies to order and that sort of thing. But anyway, as I was saying, Mohsen, different co-writer this time. So talk a little bit about that, choosing to go and being the lead writer and choosing to go with a different co-writer this time around.
So we actually have a different co-writer and actually a different artist as well. Jeff Edwards did the art for volume one and it was absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. And obviously we would have loved to have him for volume two. But you know, he had, he actually wrote a letter to the fans, which is in the back matter of issue one, of essentially saying that, hey, he would have loved to join us for the second round, but he had a son recently and he wants to focus on his family and some of the health around that. And so with that, we had to go out and find another artist that kind of, you know, manifested the same type of creativity and, you know, a bit more action oriented this time around that we wanted to look at with some of the stories. So we found a new artist to work with, Thomas Hedglund, who had worked on some projects before. And then Patrick Meany is a brilliant director. He just directed a new a musical actually called The Bring of, and it's gone on the circuits. And so he's really busy with that. But both of them we still retained as creative collaborators because they're both members of the family. And actually, Patrick helped me shoot a, you know, we're teasing Siphon to be potentially a live action series. We're pitching some of that out. And so helped me shoot kind of a little teaser trailer just to vet the concept around that. And so with that, you know, I stepped into the lead writer role, which is honestly where I wanted to be. It's great because I had an idea of where I want to take the story and it gave me kind of more ownership of to vet that out. But I mean, I love working with creative partners. I love working with people that add more to the story. And so the gentleman I worked with for this time around was my old roommate from New York named Arish. And Arish is the guy who actually got me into comics. He is a proper comic nerd, you know, from introduced me to the Civil War to Ex Machina. I mean, you name it, he's been about that. He's got a great sense of story. So I'm like, I actually tried to get him involved with Volume 1 and he wasn't having it at that point. But once we released that, he's like, okay, you guys are onto something. Let me get involved now. And so he was actually around with me in New York when I first came up with this idea of Silas and Siphon, and we bounced ideas off one another. So I think it was really nice coming full circle of getting another perspective in the mix. You know, and the one thing we did with this volume, obviously we, like I said, we got deeper with the story, looked at the purpose of pain, but we really also wanted to focus on some key themes that were educational for audiences. You know, the setting of this takes place in the Amazon. And then obviously we focus a lot on mental health, which is a very present issue and just related to how people deal with the power. And so Arish added some fun elements to that, but I also wrote editorials in each of the back matters, about people of the Amazon, protecting the Amazon, items of the Amazon, as well as, just topics of mental health, each which were relevant to each individual issue. Cause we wanted this to be a lot more educational along with the entertainment as it comes around.
Yeah, which is why Top Cow is such a perfect place for this, because Matt Hawkins, you know, who I know you know over there, he's
a proper buddy. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, he did do the same thing in his book, from Think Tank to you know, other projects that he's done, Tithe and those kind of things. He always kind of dives deep, and so yeah, definitely check out the back matter, everybody, because there's a lot of context that it adds to the story. There's not always room on the comic page to kind of flesh out settings and that kind of thing, but you can get some context reading the back matter. The other thing you did is there's a little bit of a time jump between the end of Volume 1 and Volume 2, and that's kind of true of the story. It's very fast-paced. We kind of want to get to the action, as it were. But talk a little bit about wanting to expand the scope and going back and exploring people who, you know, in the ancient past have wielded this power before, yeah. But also giving it a sense, almost like this Indiana Jones type adventure. Here's Silas, you know, this EMT, this power's thrust upon him. In the first volume, he kind of learns how it works, but he's still not totally in control. But yet he's got to go on this epic adventure. And we meet this woman who's a great supporting character, who's sort of a guide for him. And then her journey and what happens to her at the end is, you know, we don't want to spoil too much, but is very interesting as well. That had to be a lot of fun working on her arc.
Dude, I think she's probably my favorite character to just write and work with, you know, because Silas. So, you know, you bring up a good point about fast paced getting to the action. And I think part of that is, you know, when I did Volume 1, like I was new to the industry. So Top Cow was like, hey, great, get 3 issues. And that's not a lot of time and a lot of space to tell a new story with a new superhero, a new supervillain, and a new superpower. So we're like, hey, we'll get through what we need to. But, you know, I think we did a good job in putting that all together. I wish we had more time and issues to slow the pace. So, you know, with issue two, we got another, with volume two, we got another issue. So we're like, hey, we got 4 issues now to tell the rest of the story. And so we can take a little bit more time building that out, and still not enough for what I'd want to go do at the end of the day. But I think it was still great to, because that allowed us and afforded us to go a little deeper and explore kind of new concepts and new characters. You know, with the power itself, anytime I get introduced to something new, supernatural or whatnot, dude, I just nerd out and I love to know all the lore and all the history and all the mythology around it. And so that's what we really want to dive into with this. And, you know, I'm a big mythology fiend myself. And so we wanted to kind of use that as a vehicle to explore some of this power, this idea that this power is ancient, that it has existed for hundreds of thousands of years, if you will, and that it was in some ways tied to the gods. And the reason for that is our concept of religion, of connection to the gods, is supernatural in itself. And this power itself is supernatural. So being able to weave those together, I thought was super interesting. And more importantly, we wanted to show how the power has benefited humanity over the ages, right? So you see a few different siphons come up in the siphon book. You have Pachamama, who was a healer and taught people how to be healers. You saw Wolf Hednar, who was a warrior fighting for kind of protecting his people. And of course, Hunapu, which was a kind of an elder for his community, protecting them. And, you know, this idea of Hunapu and his brother, Mutuken, was built on, again, this comes in the back matter, not to spoil too much, but it actually is tied to a lot of Native American history of the twins. And the twins exist in pretty much all Native cultures, in North and South America, about being, whether they're creator entities, whether they're representing different forces, right and wrong, sun and, you know, moon, day and night. And so we want to play upon that a little bit and just weave some of that mythology into the story.
Yeah, even Cain and Abel, which is, you know, what comes to mind when you're reading the story. You know, you have these brothers, you know, one to kind of symbolizing the good of man and the other kind of symbolizing, you know, the bad things that we're capable of. But you mentioned Xenia, the character I was talking about, as being your favorite. And that was another thing that I wanted to mention, because you talk about wanting to expand the scope and talk about how this has really been a power that's been around for a long time. There's a little bit of a culture and a history built up around it. So it makes sense that there would be almost like an ecosystem, or, you know, I guess kind of analogous to like a King Arthur's court. There would be like supporting figures that might not necessarily have the power, but they'd be aware, you know, they would help out and that sort of thing. And it really feels like, as much as you built from volume one to volume two, you know, hopefully there's more volumes to come, that you could expand on that even more. We would learn about kind of other agents that work for the siphons, or work with the siphons, or even work against the siphons. Ideas percolating? I mean, is there still even more to expand?
So, you know, I love that you bring this up, because I have mapped out at least up to volume five of what I want to do with the story. Right. And so volume three was meant to complete that, this first arc of the journey, right? And have that come full circle in a lot of ways. And I think Xenia is a pivotal character for that, because as you alluded to, you know, she is tied to this power in a lot of ways, in more ways than we know, because we drop a lot of hints of her involvement, of her family. But the idea was to plant this as seeds for the future in terms of what her actual relationship is with the power, because it's much deeper than I think we fully, you know, say up front. Mm-hmm. So we'd love to explore more of that. And I love that you talk about King Arthur's court, because in volume three, what I want to introduce was a council that actually has been overseeing and watching this power for generations. And, you know, what we've played upon in certain ways is the different streams of the power, right? You have different emotions represented through color primarily, right? With purple being pain, blue being pleasure, red being passion, orange being pride. And then a few other colors we want to bring about, and how each of those streams is represented by a different person. And these people, you know, act as a vehicle to maintain the purpose of the power. And that's partly why we want to introduce the indigenous tribes as well, because in a lot of Native healing culture, when somebody is feeling ill or has spiritual issue, what they'll do is they'll put this person and they'll do ceremony with the entire tribe around them to transfer the tribe's energy into this person. And at its core, that's what I had thought the original purpose of the power would have been a sense of, where an elder, a shaman, you know, a wielder of the power, a siphon, if you will, would meet with their tribe, and they would flow everybody's energy in, right? So the one that had more could offer to the one that had less, and act as a kind of emotional communism in certain ways. And that's kind of where we'd love to take the vein of that. But of course, as things get corrupt, as we saw in volume two as well, then people use it for personal gain, as we saw with Antonio. And then you have to have warriors that come up and address that. And that's part of what the issue we want to put Silas through.
Well, that was what was so interesting too about the kind of the ancient setting that you had, and then even how that setting has evolved to the modern world. It's still sort of insular and insulated. You know, I wouldn't go so far as to say backwards, but it's just a different way of life, right? The world, the modern world, has evolved and changed so much. It's like you couldn't really do that anymore. We don't have, you know, villages or little communities where you would have the siphon who's the conduit for the power. But really, you're talking about a village or a kind of an extended family using that to, as you said, you know, emotional communism. How could, would that possibly work? You know, like, I think about how divisive things are in this country these days. Like, you couldn't even get people to work together. So again, that's what's so fascinating and so much to explore, really.
Well, so that's again, part of what we touch on in volume two, but barely, because this is something, again, a theme we want to look at for volume three. And again, if we had more space in this volume, we could delve deeper in that. But we do introduce this idea of the every mind. Mm-hmm. Which is a connection of a collection of all the emotional energy, spiritual cycle, you know, around the world, all tied in and connected to one. And what we'll see is, you know, Zenny's a little more dogmatic than she lets on. And, you know, Olivia kind of, she puts a finger on that to be like, hey, this girl's got something going on with her. And part of what we want to introduce as part of this council and a shadow council, if you will, is a group of people that think that you can heal the world's problems using this power, but we need to find a way to amplify it. We need to find a way for it to kind of affect everyone. And I think we want to play with that in volume three. I think to your point, you know, a siphon could do this for a village or a tribe because you can be close enough to everybody's energy. And what we saw with volume two is like, if you get close to certain ley lines, you can get access to a lot more energy from the power. I mean, similar to kind of Professor Xavier's headset. I forget what it was called. Cerebro, right, from that way. And so this acts as more of a supernatural way of that. And so we do want to introduce this idea of how you could apply this on a grander scale and what's the ethics of that? And, you know, if you don't address the underlying issue, which is how we deal with these emotions, even if you reset the world and reset everybody's emotions, are we just going to go back to the same way we were? Cause we don't have the right tools to work through the gunk we get.
Yeah, which is another thing. So I, you know, I mentioned everybody about that, you know, play, in the first volume, Mosen mentioned it as well between, you know, you can take pleasure or you can take pain. You know, what's the balance? There's always duality in siphon. That's the same thing here in volume two. We're talking about all this ancient stuff and how the power's been around for a long time or whatever. That's juxtaposed against, Livia, who, you know, you mentioned you wanted to get her more involved. She's still back in the modern world, you know, this research scientist, mental health, that sort of thing, trying to make a world a better place in her own way. And it's such a juxtaposition against kind of the ancient world. She's using modern medical techniques and equipment and what have you. But also this idea of somebody who we saw in the first volume, which it was great as a callback, because when you see him in the first volume, Silas kind of lashes out against him and you don't expect him to show back up. And you're like, wait, Silas sort of created this enemy, you know, this guy who maybe will have access to the power as well. We don't know all the answers yet. But again, this idea that just because you have the power, much like Antonio, doesn't mean you're going to use it in the right way. So that's another kind of challenge. You know, you talk about finding a way to use this power to help make the world a better place, but it's got to be in the hands of the right person as well.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I think that's the case with most powers that we have at the end of the day, right? Like you can use it for good. You can use it for evil. And I think you asked a really good question in your YouTube video for volume one was you're asking like, hey, is this power altruistic in itself? Right. And I think the question for that is it really is dependent on the beholder of the power because that's the one who fashions it for what it was. And, you know, most of what we invent or have invented has been used for beneficial purposes. Even gunpowder was invented by the Chinese for festivals, celebration. But anything that you can use for good, people can make it for bad. And that is now, you know, the ultimate, you know, ammunition for war, essentially. And this power is no different, right? It depends on who wields it in. And we'll see that play out.
Well, and even in the first volume, we talk about who's wielding it. Silas, you know, at his core seems to be a very good person, but even the best of us were capable of doing bad things. You know, either we have the wrong perspective, we have the wrong information, or we just have a moment of weakness. So, you know, just inherently as humans, we're capable of making mistakes, making errors, making bad choices. That just adds another layer. And I'm curious, because this really is the kind of evolution of Silas. He is the main character. And he has matured in a lot of ways from volume one to volume two. But even in volume two, even toward the end, there is still doubt. I mean, I still think he has a way to go. So I talk a little bit about his journey and talk about how you relate to him as the writer, as it got to the point where he's kind of directing you, is kind of taking on a life of his own.
I mean, I think in a lot of ways, right? I think, you know, every writer writes what they know and so much of themselves and their characters. And I think Silas has a lot of that. And I think this is something that Xenia really brought home with Liv, where, and Liv has known this in her core in certain ways, but she just hasn't been able to manifest this, was the fact that just Silas feels a lot. He's an emotional little bear.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And in volume one, he was really closed off by that because he was trying to protect himself from what he felt, which was kind of pain and guilt from the death of a close friend. And, you know, so now he's gotten more comfortable with this, but he still doesn't, you know, but the effects of the power are enhancing as he's getting more attuned with it. And that's causing, you know, him to react in ways that he didn't necessarily expect. And, you know, that's been part of the challenge with him, right? Is that he just works on instinct. He'll just do what feels right in the moment. Versus Liv, who's much more controlled and much more rational about how she approaches it. So there, again, this idea, this duality of between the two and the tension it creates, especially early on. And, but, you know, with Silas, he's trying to reconcile what's being put at him from a very, you know, methodical, scientific way versus what feels good to him. And he's got to balance that through. And he's not always sure of where he stands because he's had enough incidences where he's lost control, where he doubts himself. Right. Am I the right person for this? Can I use this effectively? I want to do more. Can I push myself to do more in a way that's safe? And he's made mistakes and it's come through in many ways, you know, but even with that, we wanted to give him a really strong sense of doubt where he was completely unsure of himself. Right. I mean, typical hero's journey, it's like you build them up and then you break them down.
Yeah.
Right. And for that, it was him being told that he was not meant for the power. Because this whole time he was told he was worthy. He was told that, you know, he has to do this because he was given this opportunity. And so that gave him some sense of security to be like, hey, I need to figure this out because I was, you know, told by this ancient power, by, you know, people who know better that I was capable and ready. And, you know, that fueled him in a lot of what he did. And then to take that away for, you know, the demon to say, no, you were just a mistake. You weren't even meant to have this. And whether, you know, we leave it a little open-ended of whether that's true or not to let the reader decide. But, at the end of the day, it has the same impact on Silas where he questions his entire purpose with this. And he has to come back to the table and see, like, what does this power mean to him? What's the right way for him to approach it? And I mean, I think it's great of how he does that. I wish we had more time to show the full length of it. But you see his rise at the end of it.
Yeah, and we're not going to spoil it at all, everybody. But go, I mean, when you read it, you'll see exactly what Moses is talking about. But there's also a hint of, okay, if he wasn't supposed to have the power, who was? And that was just like a oh shit moment. Like
I wanted to ask you what you thought of that, because there were a few surprises we revealed. And without maybe revealing too much, what was your take on reading that? Were you expecting any of that? Was it?
I was not. When it was revealed that Silas may have not been meant for the power, it felt sort of vague. Like, you know, maybe it was somebody else. You know, kind of like the Green Lantern ring, right? The whole idea that it went to Hal Jordan instead of Guy Gardner because he was just geographically closer. So mm-hmm. It kind of felt like that. Maybe there, you know, somebody else on the West Coast or whatever. And then when we find out it's somebody that we actually know in the story that was supposed to get the power and how different that person is from Silas. And again, we're trying not to spoil, but people that are paying attention will probably figure it out. Because yeah, they are two completely different people in their personalities. Yeah. That was really interesting. And it sets up so much, you know, for the next volume to,
if you remember in volume one, Silas was on his way home.
Yeah.
When he was first tapped by the power. So it makes you wonder where was the power heading when it approached him.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was really fantastic. And then like you said, Xenia and her connection, clearly there's something more there because what happens to her at the end was really, really interesting as well. So yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the next volume. I'm ready. And who knows, maybe Jeff comes back. Maybe Jeff and Thomas work on it together. Cause I do want to ask you about working, with Thomas. I know you and Jeff had a really good, collaboration. And everybody, you can go back and watch. I encourage you go back and listen to our first interview that I did with Mohsen and Jeff talking about, I think issue one maybe had just come out at that point, or I had had a chance to read it and it hadn't quite come out. And then yeah, Rocky and I have a review on the YouTube channel as well. But talk a little bit about the collaboration with Thomas. Was it just like with Jeff where it was, you know, he got it right away? Was it a little bit of a back and forth? What was that working relationship like?
Jeff was a much more seasoned artist. He's been around the block. He's older, whatnot, and Thomas is younger in his career. So I think that manifested in kind of our engagement style, where I think with Jeff was very clear about what he needed to go do in terms of sketches. And with Thomas, it was a development process to be like, hey, what's the best way to get engaged with this? What we ended up doing with Thomas in a lot of ways was a lot more storyboard sketching, just to make sure that we had the right flow and the right, sequences come through. Jeff had the advantage of having more time to really delve into how he wanted the shots to be. And what was great about Jeff as well is being, the seasoned veteran, we had him look at a lot of the initial sketches from Thomas, provide feedback, right? With as a more mature artist, kind of mentoring a younger artist to be like, hey, you've done this shot a few times, let's look at it from this way. Hey, And Jeff actually helped build some of the sketches for some of the later issues, where you see the really, it's particularly in issue three, and you talked about this, where we wanted to do kind of a Temple of Doom adventure that hadn't been seen before, right? Because Indiana Jones, you have a lot of the traps and whatnot that are kind of loved and known, but I want to do something much more supernatural and psychedelic in a lot of ways. And so a lot of the sequences you saw was Jeff's initial take on it, and then Thomas putting his own flavor on that side of it. What Thomas really shone with was a lot of the action. I think that's his forte. That's his specialty. It's the action shots. You can see the bottom left here, that cover with Silas building up that shot. That's Thomas's, cover. And so I think he really brought that into the mix. You also see his art mature throughout the issues.
Oh, yeah.
I think issue two was much stronger than issue one, and issue three and four were a little more rushed from that side, but still had some great art as it came through. And so, you really see his development in that. And, with everybody I work with, it's always a back and forth. It's always creative collaboration, right? Where, write the script, look at the sketches, provide feedback. But you still want the artist to put their own edge on it and have it be their own.
Yeah, and you did have one member of the art team that got to come back, and thank God, because you mentioned how important color is and how it really informs different parts of the story, whether it's, you know, what emotion is kind of being manipulated or what have you, or being experienced by the characters in the book, but also setting the overall tone. So John Kalis, your color artist from the first volume, came back, and that provided some visual continuity as well. So I'm sure that was a help for Thomas also.
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting because what John said was when he found that Jeff wasn't able to do volume two, he was a little bummed because he loved Jeff's art. But then when he saw Tom's art, he's like, wait, this is pretty great. Like, okay, I can get on board with this. And I mean, John is brilliant, dude. He's a proper veteran. And what we want to do with the colors this time around is really take it to the next level. And you see that on the cover of the top right of the screen right here, where you see just the dazzle of colors, right? Because we wanted to be able to showcase, and we'll get as deeper into this as, emotions aren't just a single stream, right? They're a collection of feelings that we have as they come through. And so we wanted that to showcase in the art with a lot of more, and you see this in the temple with the ley lines, with all these different energies coming together from all these different people. And so we got to play with a lot more of that, the rainbow, if you will. And it was just really exciting to look at. But even with that, even when you have just a singular color, and if you look at the last page of issue three, like the coloring that John has done with even just one color using purple is just brilliant. He really just makes a sheen, make the pages really shine.
Yeah, I mean the color in this book, again, it was the same thing in volume one as it is in volume two. It really makes it pop, and we get a chance to experience the, you know, the emotions that these characters are feeling as well. A lot of that is due to what John is doing. So yeah, brilliant, brilliant work. So volume three, do we know yet?
I think
Including sales numbers.
what I've noticed, and let me know what you've seen. It's a tough time in the industry right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's a tough time. So I did for my birthday was the same day as a issue one, volume two launch party. And so I hit up Mission Comics, which is my local shop, run by a gentleman named Leif Smith, really great guy. And we had a great party there and whatnot. And, you know, a few months later, he held a community meeting and he's like, "Hey guys, I just want to get advice." He's like, "Sales are down like 15, 20%. And part of that is foot traffic's down post pandemic, just things haven't recovered. And then there's so much out there with comics that it's challenging for people to really settle into what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I mean, if see Marvel and DC, primarily Batman and Spider-Man just own the market, I feel like.
Yep.
Right. And so for a lot else out there, it's really tricky. So a lot of stores are struggling, a lot of people struggling, and a lot of stories are struggling, you know, and I'll have to look at the final sales numbers as they were. You know, I think we were helped by the fact that, hey, we won a Ringo last time around for favorite hero. We were nominated for a few ones. Mustafa, the Inkist, our inker, was nominated for an Inkwell Award for volume two as well, which is super exciting. So we'll see what comes from this. But I think for now, we're just letting the story digest for a little bit. And that gives me time to ideate on a volume three and also do pitches for a TV series to be like, "Hey guys, you know, I think it was you that said you'd love this to be a live action series."
Oh, man.
You know what? We should go work on that.
It would work so well as a live action, especially the second, like I felt it in the first one. The first one had a little bit more of a procedural feel, mm-hmm. You know, like procedural TV show, what have you, Law and Order, or, you know, what have you, that kind of thing, CSI. The second one, as you mentioned, you know, we both mentioned Indiana Jones has, you know, much more of a globetrotting adventure feel. But either way, I think it would really work. I would love to see it. I just imagine what the thing they can do is see CGI now and the, mm-hmm. you know, the colors and that sort of thing. And it's not too complicated that people couldn't jump on. And that's the thing, everybody, like you heard Mohsen say, they've got it out there. They're pitching it. They're showing it around to people. We all know as collectors, speculators, what happens when something's optioned. So now's the time before the news drops. Go out and get yourself the single issues of volume one, the trade of volume one, order the trade of volume two, go out and get the single issues. Now is the time to be on board, because that's the other part of it, right? As collectors, as comic book people, we love to say, "Oh, yeah, now you know about Siphon, but I read it even before."
You like, get the proper bragging rights, right?
Yeah,
I found this before everybody else did.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, it's been so great catching up with you, Mohsen. I do want to ask one last question as we're winding down here. Let's say that it does move forward in some sort of live action form, either a limited TV series or a movie or that kind of thing, feature film. Do you have somebody in mind that you would cast, like your dream casting for Silas? I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit.
You know, there was somebody that Arish mentioned, and I forget the name now. That would have been great. But also, you know, I think Riz Ahmed would make a great Silas, because he's got this like moody and but also the smoldering intensity about him, but also just very thoughtful and sincere and kind. So I think he would make a good job with this too.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, great choice. Well, I'll throw it over to you one last time. Any last thoughts for our viewers, our listeners on Siphon Volume 2?
I'm super excited for people to pick up the story, get deeper with it, with learning more about the power, understanding more about Livia. I think we introduced her to some extent, but didn't get as deep as we'd like to. And, you know, a big focus was to have stronger female characters in this story, which is why we have Xenia, who's a complete badass.
Yes.
One of my favorites. And then Livia as well, really stepping up, as a foil in a lot of ways to Silas. And, but also, you know, as you mentioned early on, that people are human, and this power, whether good or bad, is dependent on how people use it. And even people with the best of intentions end up doing bad things. And you see that manifest, you know, with Silas of creating his own monster, essentially, you know, for the story, we actually wanted him to be kind of like what Batman did. The Joker was you create your own bad guy. You create your own enemy. And that's something that Silas will have to reconcile with. You know, in this issue and then later issues to come. And so again, as we get more time and more space, we get add more and more layers to this topic. And I'm just really excited to hear what people think. And I always love getting feedback and what other people want to see with it.
Yeah. Where's the best place for somebody to reach out, if they want to ask questions or provide feedback after they check it out?
Either my Twitter or my Instagram are prime options. And I also, they can go to my website and just drop me an email there.
Great. And I'll put links to the social media and the website in the show notes, everybody. So if you're having trouble finding them. One last thought, in terms of Silas kind of creating his own monster. One of the things I love about it, that happened before his, kind of perverted mentorship with Antonio. So he doesn't even have, you know, he made
mistakes. That's all on him. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Right. He made mistakes when he was working with Antonio, but he can kind of be like, oh, he misled me. That was before, and he's got no one to blame but himself, which, yeah, again, we're going to be talking about the duality of that when he's, you know, faced with that challenge. I can't wait to see how it all plays out.
Thank you, man. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah, great catching up. And to you listeners, we'll thank you as well. We really appreciate you joining us as always. Don't forget, May 14th, Volume 2 is out. So now is the time. Let your retailer know so you can be sure and get a copy. So that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
Take care, guys.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.